Ready when you are, Marcy. We're good? We're good. Can you hear me back there? Okay, let's call to order the Board of Directors special meeting for May 2nd. Roll call, please.
On the roll for the Board of Directors special budget hearing of May 2nd, 2018, Director Abecoga, Director Barrett, Director Bowders, Director Canepa,
here.
Director Chavez, Director Cutter, Director Joya, here. Director Groom, Director Haggerty, Director Kim, Director Nis, Director Miley, Director Kim is present, Director Mitchell, Director Ju, Director Ronan, she's here, Director Ross, Director Sanchez, Director Sparing, okay, Director Wagon Connect, Director Zane, Nis is present, Secretary Sinks,
here.
Vice Chair Rice.
Here.
Chair Hudson.
Here.
2, 4, 6, 8, 10. We have a quorum.
Mr. Good. Chair, can I ask an administrative question?
Okay.
You've got my...
I'm here.
Why does Mr. Jew come after Ms. Mitchoff in the alphabet? It's been bugging me forever and a day.
I believe it's Lee. Because he's the appointee of Lee.
But Lee comes before Mitchoff. It's okay, Marcy. It's not your fault. I just think we need to change... that.
Yeah.
Unless it's mayor, but that M-A comes before M-I.
I'd like to say I respect my colleague very much, I don't mind.
We're in this meeting quick. Okay, please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God,
poor Dave Canepa. Okay. Hello!
Okay, good. And we'll get it straight. Okay, this is the first public hearing. We are open to consider testimony on the Air District's proposed budget for fiscal year 2019. Staff report, Mr. McKay.
Thank you, Chair Hudson and members of the board. The Budget and Finance Committee has now reviewed the proposed budget twice and has referred it to the full board. This is the first of two public hearings. I'm going to talk a little bit about the current fiscal year. There's nothing.
And don't hold back all the public that's out there waiting to come in on the budget, okay?
Yeah.
What the heck
I'll
is in
I'll make
that
it as
coffee.
Interesting as possible.
This is the hottest paper.
Talk a little bit about the current year where nothing, fortunately, too interesting has happened. We'll talk about our financial history a little bit so we've got context for the conversation, discuss the proposed budget, and the next steps, which are simply to have the second public hearing. So let me talk a little bit first about the current budget year. We've got in the current year a general fund budget of about $95 million, although that includes large use of reserves. And as of March 2018, revenues on target and expenditures are all on target. Before going into the proposed budget fiscal year ending 2019, I'd like to take the time to provide a little historical context. It's important for a variety of reasons, but especially because the committee has asked what would we do in the event of a downturn, and of course our financial history gives us an opportunity to talk about that. During the downturn, we did use reserves carefully, and I've got some charts to illustrate that. We also reduced our staffing through attrition. Didn't have to let anybody go, but we let our vacancies build up. We put off some expenditures. We initiated a cost recovery policy, which was very helpful. I'll talk more about that. And through it all, we continued to fund our retirement liabilities, which meant we were investing at the bottom of the market. That worked out very well. I've got a chart for that, too. Let me illustrate this history with some graphs. So this is a chart showing our reserves. During the downturn, we did carefully draw down our reserves. I've mentioned to the Budget Finance Committee there was a lot of modeling that went on to ensure we were able to draw that down in a careful manner. And we drew it down in 2011 to $10 million, which at the time was the board's directed minimum for our reserves. And we've now recovered substantially. We also had to cut back on service supply expenditure. Those are now back up. In 2017, you can see in the blue, we did a down payment for this building. In 2018, as I mentioned, we had a substantial use of reserves, so you see that's high. And our proposed budget for service supply is about $34 million. We also let our staffing trend down. Again, just through attrition, got as low as 310 people actually sitting in seats in 2013. We're now trending back up. And as I always say, one of my favorite slides, back in 2008, we essentially had not started funding our medical liabilities for retirement at all. But we set out on that path, and by putting a little money aside every year, even during the hard times, we've made a lot of progress. You can see our obligations, of course, continue to increase, but our funding level is increasing much more quickly. And I'll go into these obligations in more detail later in the presentation. That was medical liability. On the COPPERS pension side, of course, we've had this interesting ride where in 2007 it was suggested that we were superfunded, and then the rate of return dropped. And the funding ratio somehow dropped from almost 110% to 66%. So not a great record here of estimating returns. But for that reason, we're going to talk a little bit about introducing a little tweak to our current policy for pre-funding COPPERS pension. So the proposed budget, that was the past. Now looking to the future, our proposed budget is $99 million. This year, we're only asking for $4 million from reserves. That's for use of the TIO, the Technology Implementation Office, for a revolving loan fund. We're continuing the cost recovery policy, and this board has already seen the first public hearing for the fees, and I think the cost recovery policy is what we have to thank for the fact that we didn't even have any public speakers at that first hearing for the fees a few weeks ago here in this room. I'll talk a little more about the cost recovery policy in a moment. Our staffing levels, we're asking to increase from 381 to 397. We do address retirement liabilities, and there's a 3.1% COLA in this. So let me now go into some detail. Permit fees are about half of our revenue. Property tax is about a third. On the cost side, our personnel costs are about two-thirds, service supply and capital, the other portion. And we are increasing our budget this year. I think it's helpful just to see a high-level comparison and contrast of how both revenues and expenses, recurring revenues, recurring expenses, increase in this budget in a manner that's balanced. Our recurring revenues are increasing on the property tax side, 1.7, permit fees, 2.6, AB 617 state funding, which we hope to be recurring, $4.8 million. On the recurring expense side, 32 additional staff with benefits is 4.7, the COLA and benefits, 2.3. We actually believe that due to AB 617 and a variety of other challenges we're taking on, that we're going to see recurring costs for air monitoring equipment. We're looking at a estimate of $1 million every year right now for that. And with this new monitoring and the data, a high data density we are now able to obtain, we really have to also budget in data analysis, recurring data analysis. We're gonna say that we've got another $1 million every year going forward for data analysis, primarily associated with air monitoring equipment. We've already had the first fee hearing, public hearing for the full board, so I'll go through this a little quickly, but we are allowed to recover all of our costs. Our cost recovery became very low back in 2011, but a cost recovery policy was put in place. As I've mentioned, I believe that cost recovery policy and the participation of the regulated community is why we've had no public speakers at the first fee hearing. We did reach 83% cost recovery in 2017, but it's important to point out that we are hiring. We're trying to fill those seats that were lost through attrition and also hiring more people to take on some of these new challenges. So we do expect cost recovery levels to drop back down over the next few years. The proposed staffing in this budget is 397 people. That's an increase of 16 from the 2018 number. I'd like to point out, though, that the 2018 number included an increase mid-year of 22. So we started 2018 with a budget of 359. It was increased by 22 to 381. And now we're asking for 16 to go to 397. Yeah.
Jeff, a question. So that's 397 positions, not yes. necessarily people?
That is correct. Well, there's always a vacancy rate.
And then, so could you relate that to the new 617 funding and the fact that we did get it, I guess, for this first year? It's
yes.
been promised, but the proof will be in the pudding from year to year. So I guess what I want to ask is, as we expand staff, how will we respond if these new sources of funding, especially, right. you know, the 617 is an easy one to point to, if it does not come through, how will we respond? And I'm wondering if, because we may have some latitude within the budgeted positions to shrink, expand, et cetera.
Absolutely. It's a very important point, Director Rice. So the $4.8 million represents about 5% of our budget. If we look at the downturn and the mechanisms that we used during the downturn, we were able to weather decreases that were larger than that. I think that similar to the previous downturn in 2007-2008, we would attempt to use a balanced approach. In other words, it is certainly true we could attempt to address this only through attrition or only through perhaps removing some of these positions. But the truth is we have other options and we could consider those. But the most immediate and obvious one would certainly be to not be able to hire people. In theory, we also, if we don't get 617 funding, some of that funding is meant for monitoring, meteorology. It's possible we could also cut back on those items. You can see that we've increased our expected recurring expenses by $2 million, $1 million for meteorology, $1 million for data analysis. So that's another area where we could revisit the numbers.
So I guess I would just say that it seems like we need to keep Sacramento's eyes on the ball with regards to mm-hmm. this mandate that comes along with 617, which is a good thing, but we can't carry it out and fulfill their desire if we don't have that funding without some pain elsewhere in our activities.
Absolutely true, Director Rice. We are spending a lot of time on that, and in particular, our executive officer is spending a lot of time on that.
Mr. Broadbent.
No, I was just going to add to Mr. McKay's remarks is that we are spending a considerable amount of time in Sacramento trying to secure this funding. This 4.8 only represents 20% of a $27 million allotment, which was the current fiscal year we're in. There is no money. It's zeroed out for the air districts. CARB does have money, though, for it. And we've raised this concern now amongst all the districts to not only CARB, the administration, but a number of legislators. And we continue to try to get this, at least see some money into the May revise. So we'll know here soon whether those efforts have been successful. And if that doesn't occur, we're then, of course, going all the way down to the budget itself when it gets adopted. So I think we actually have heard a number of folks positively indicate to us that they want to see some money to the districts, air districts. And I can tell you right away that we will have to pare back the 617 implementation efforts if we don't see this money. I mean, that's the most important thing. I think we should, and we'll let them know that as well.
Let's let Mr. McKay finish. This is about a public comment for the, which could be very brief, and then I'll bring it back to the board. Go ahead.
Thank you. I've got two detail charts here, which are meant more as a resource than something to go through in detail here. As I mentioned, in January or December, in the current fiscal year, we added 22 positions. So these 22 positions have already been added, approved by the board. And in addition, then, for the current proposed budget, we're proposing 16 new positions. And you can see that a lot of that as one would expect is in meteorology and measurement. We have a reserves policy, 20% of the general fund budget. So for this year, that means a $19 million minimum. Our projected reserves are 34.7, so rounding, it should be 35 million. That's truncated. And that does include the remaining building sale proceeds. I'll talk just a little bit about how we're designating these reserves right now, but I do want to emphasize that designating reserves does not in any way commit them. And any expenditure of these funds would have to come back to the board for these funds to be pulled out of reserves. So right now, we've got $35 million in reserves. We're suggesting $5 million of this for the additional purchase here at 375 Beale Street on the 8th floor, $7 million for East Bay Real Estate, just an estimate, $3 million for helping out folks in Napa and Sonoma after the terrible fires in October, and $1 million for wood smoke. That's 16, and that then leaves the 19, which is 20% of the budget. And the use of reserves in the proposed budget is $4 million for the TIO for the revolving loan fund. And I think the board's familiar with that. A five-year revolving loan fund that would seek matching funding from private industry. Let me turn now to the important topic of retirement liabilities. I'll start first with medical, other post-employment benefits, OPEB, and then I'll talk about pension. I already showed the chart for OPEB. We made a lot of progress, and we made it very quickly with OPEB. Well, if 10 years is quick. I think it is, actually, for the amount of money that we have put aside. So we've got an obligation for our medical liability of $59 million. We've got $40 million in the bank, 68% funded, so unfunded is $19 million or 32%. And just to, I think, a good illustration of why it's important to fund liabilities as they accrue, as opposed to the way we're having to do it here, the PAYGO cost is only 2.5. Our discretionary contribution has been, and we're proposing should be in this fiscal year, $4 million, so that's $6.5 million. I'll talk about our policy here now a little bit. So for OPEB, there's currently a funding policy to get to 90% funding, 90% funding level. There's not a target date. In the current fiscal year that we're in, we've budgeted $4 million, discretionary dollars, to put into OPEB. At that rate, we're going to reach our target level rather quickly. Staff's not recommending today any change in this policy. We feel if we just continue with this $4 million discretionary funding for a couple of years, three at the most, we'll reach that target funding level at least. And the great thing there, of course, is then $4 million that we've been using every year to pre-fund CalPERS, to pre-fund OPEB, we can think about a new place to put that money in. And helping out with CalPERS might be one place to do that. But that will be for a future budget discussion. Now, CalPERS is a more complicated story. CalPERS is always required that some funding occur year over year. We've got there a $283 million obligation. It's 73% funded if we believe CalPERS estimates. And so that's $207 million in the bank, unfunded $76 million, which is 27%. We've got $8.2 million required contribution. Five of that is because we've got an unfunded liability and did not pay those liabilities as they accrued. The normal cost is $3.3 million. So let's talk about our policy here a little bit. And this slide may not be quite as clear as it should be, so let me go through it carefully. The current funding policy has a 90% funding level target, but not a target date. In the current year budget, the year that we're in, we've got discretionary funding set aside of an extra $1 million on top of what we're required to contribute. Our recommendation to change the funding policy is to put in a target date. And so really, it's only the first of those sub-bullets under policy, that is the change in policy. We're suggesting it's that we establish a 20-year target to reach 90% funding. Now, what does that mean if we want to reach 90% funding in 20 years? Well, we have to make some assumptions. If we assume a 6.5% discount rate, which is more pessimistic than CalPERS assumed, and we got that from looking at how CalPERS has done over 20 years, then basically it takes $1 million discretionary funding on top of what we're required to put in over 20 years to get to 90%. So effectively establishing this policy, this change of the policy to have a 20-year target date to reach 90% means that we would continue with discretionary funding of $1 million in addition to what we're required to fund every year for 20 years with the current projection. This slide is not really necessary to the budget presentation, but it's just interesting. This is a CalPERS slide, and there's only one piece of it that applies to us. That's the very right-hand group, the other special districts. It's interesting. You can see that if they assume 7.5%, then on average special districts are 7.5% return on investment. Then special districts are on average about 77% funded. But if you have a less optimistic earnings projection, the impact is pretty severe. A 2% assumption means we're only 39% funded. So again, not something that is absolutely necessary to this presentation, just an interesting piece of information. Now, one thing that we're going to want to look into in more detail as we continue with discretionary funding is the discretion we have on where we invest those funds. We're not going to attempt with the budget cycle to make all the decisions on what vehicles we should use for this discretionary funds. But after the budget cycle, we expect to be coming back to the Budget Finance Committee and then to the board with a discussion of options such as PARS, which is probably familiar, and also CERBT and some self-directed 115 trusts. The interesting thing about that last item, the self-directed trust, is to the degree that the board would like to have some leeway to target our investments at vehicles that support our mission, it's the self-directed 115 trust that would allow that. It does mean that the board would be asking staff to make some investment decisions. So in summary, we've got a balanced budget. We're using $4 million out of reserves for the Technology Implementation Office. The number of budget positions increases to 397. For the CalPERS pension, we're suggesting that we establish a 20-year target to reach 90% funding. For OPEB, we believe that the continuation of the $4 million annual contribution is going to get us to our target soon, so we're not suggesting a change for the policy there. And we do have this great opportunity to reallocate that $4 million sometime in the future when we achieve that target. Next steps, we've got the second public hearing. We get to talk about this all over again on June 6. Thank you.
That's it?
That's it.
That's it?
That's it.
Public comment is open. Do we have any cards, Marcy? Now's the time to address this board on the item before us, which is the budget for fiscal year 2019, going once, going twice. Nobody's rushing forward. Final call. Closed. On to board member questions and comments. Mr. Ross.
Thank you.
Then Mr. Bauer.
Mr.
You're way down there. I can't see you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and former marathoner yourself. On slide 23. So the, okay, so 20 years. No, let's go. I'm sorry. Slide 25. I'll clean my glasses someday. So if it takes 20 years of $1 million extra to cover the $76 million, that would mean that for every dollar we're spending now, we're saving approximately $2.76 in the future.
This is meant to get to the level directed by the current policy, which is 90% funding. Mm-hmm. So that would be taking us to about $250 million funded.
All right, so it's 90%, not 100%. Okay, so it'd be about $2.30. So for every dollar we're investing now, we're saving the district over $2 in the future, is what.
That's a very important point, Director Ross, and the Budget and Finance Committee has asked the staff come back with some graphics to illustrate the positive effects of funding obligations as they accrue rather than doing PAYGO.
And that's on that's at 6.5%. If we do a better investment vehicle,
that's absolutely correct.
We could increase that.
All right. Yes.
Great.
Thank you. Member Bowders, then Joya, then Zane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank the staff for a really excellent report on this. I just want to put a plug in for putting a little more time into the 115 self-directed pension trust. We went through that evaluation this whole past year. We actually voted to fund it last night. And in our examination of that, the green investment strategy is actually much more compatible with a 10 to 20 year trajectory than it is for short-term investments. And so I think if you are looking to marry the mission of what the organization does here at the district, I think with an investment stream, it's a very good match is what my recommendation would be. I'm not on the committee to review this with you, so I'm going to get my comments in now. And I think the other thing I would just say is that your assessment as to what the discount rate is spot on. It is not what the state is saying. I spent a lot of time with CalPERS on this. It is not going to be a 7% discount rate. So very forward thinking, and appreciate your work on that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Member Joya.
Since I'm following John, let me welcome the newest member, Mayor John Bowders from Emeryville, sitting over in the Rebecca Kaplan seat, right there on the warmly filling that seat in a good way. So welcome. I just wanted to point out, Jack, you made a comment about the $27 million to implement AB 617. I'm sure you're aware that there's a coalition of legislators who've written a letter to the governor really wanting that to be 75, asking for an increase to $75 million. So hopefully that's $27 million will go up to $75 million. And that's, of course, in addition to the $50 million share of the $250 million that the district will get to distribute through the Carr-Moyer grants. But at least that $27 million will hopefully go to $75 million. And we should advocate for that specifically.
I agree, Director Joya. We're intimately involved in that letter, actually.
Yeah.
We have a kind of a high level of skepticism whether the legislature is actually going to provide us that 75. We think it's going to be somewhere in between the 27 and the 75.
Right. It's probably a starting point for mm-hmm. their budget, right?
Past Chair Liz.
So let me mention, because Jack just referenced it as well, you all have spent an enormous amount of time in Sacramento, and I mean, it's evident. But going back to Katie's question regarding 617, do we have any leverage there whatsoever? You can be frank.
I think he just was.
Well, I don't know. Honestly, I would tell you not a lot, although
What was promised?
There's a considerable, as Director Joya mentioned, there's a number of legislators have signed on to a letter. We've briefed a number of people. I think that's actually made a lot of progress. We just haven't seen the exact numbers now as a result of that lobbying effort.
Right, but let me continue from that. Yes, John, I didn't know about the letter. So the question would be, if the funding doesn't come through, are we then forced to make cuts? And if so, are we still tied to the promises we made when the negotiations took place last summer? So my frustration with this is fair and straightforward negotiations took place. Mm-hmm. Money was promised. It may never be delivered. What then? How then will we handle this as a district?
That's a great question. I'm just hoping that over the next several weeks we do see the results of our hard work in Sacramento. If it doesn't, though, I would recommend to you as your exec officer to pare back 617 implementation. That is really, I think, the best thing we could and should be doing, and let them know that you just can't be handing down these mandates like this without the proper resources for us to implement them. Now, we've gone ahead and genuinely, you know, started to staff up and started to develop plans, so I would suggest we pare that back in line with our budget, and I would bring that back to you.
So my concern would be, because I think we're really trying, we're talking about it, we're almost getting to it, 400 employees. I'm concerned that we get the employees hired, and people leave other jobs perhaps to take jobs here, and then we say, gosh, we just don't know what to do because the state never came through on the funding, maybe with some of the funding, but not with the sufficient funding. I'm not saying now what you should or could do, but I think we should have a plan for it. So to pass the budget means that we've got to accept that we're expecting money from the state. So our contingency plan, just like dealing with PERS, we know PERS is not going to come in at 7% or anything that they've offered in the past. We have to be ready to do that. So I'm putting this on record because I think we could end up at that point, and I think that would be not only sad for us as a district, but very difficult for people who get hired.
Certainly, Director, and this is, it's an important point. So it's about 5% of our budget. I think we're moving ahead in a manner that's sufficiently careful that, to be specific about the hires, we'd be able to handle our headcount just through attrition, and we would have other tools that we could bring to bear. And those would be, for instance, cutting back on other elements of AB 617, which include meteorology purchases, data analysis, and other related items.
So, but we're really passing this on the promises that were made last year, hoping they'll be kept this year.
That's absolutely true, but we certainly feel that we wouldn't have to do anything
draconian.
Painful to, yeah. Draconian is a very good word. Thank you,
Director. Okay.
Secretary Sinks, then Member Mitchoff, then Member Gioia.
Well, I appreciate a couple of comments. Jack's comment that our intention is to basically say to the state, look, you do need to honor what was said last summer. Our efforts are going to scale in no small part based on what you're able to do for us. I mean, we have a mandate under the state, but it's an unfunded mandate until it's funded. And so we need to be clear about that. We are increasing staff a lot, betting on the come that the, you know, the state's going to come through. I would certainly support a mid-year adjustment or adjustment at some point to staffing levels if, you know, this doesn't come through. You know, if you take a look at our funded liability for CalPERS at 73%, we're actually a little under our peer agencies at 77%, if I'm reading this data correctly. Is that true?
That's correct.
Okay. And now we're talking about hiring a bunch more people. I think we have to be smart about this. And with regard to Director Bowder's comment, I mean, wow, we get some outstanding directors from the East Bay, I have to say.
Yes.
Thank you, Rod.
You're much welcome. You're very welcome.
Walked into that one.
Well, no, it's true. Real leaders. I would say that we've done similar things with our liabilities. We understand that, you know, CalPERS is having to act on behalf of the many agencies that pool, and having some control over the investments, and also, you know, our timing and our circumstances may not be the same as CalPERS beginning to have some control over when we fund and how we fund and so forth is only prudent. Even if we think CalPERS is doing a brilliant investment strategy, you know, our timing is going to be different than theirs. So in my city, we've also done these, taken such actions. And yeah, I really appreciate the comments from the mayor of Emeryville. Thank you.
Member Mitchoff, then Gioia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I echo all of my colleagues' comments on, and I'm a member of the Budget Committee, and we will begin looking at that. What I wanted to recommend going along with the concern on the AB 617 funding, I'm a member, Contra Costa County is a member of the Delta County Coalition, and we are finding, given what this governor is doing relative to water and here, there, and everywhere, we are now sending letters to gubernatorial candidates. And I'm sure you will be as successful as you can be in this coming fiscal year and budget year. And as Dr. McKay says, through attrition, we can handle it if the money doesn't come through. But I think it's important to put these gubernatorial candidates on notice that this is a promise made, a mandate, and they need to keep this in mind as they move forward. I think it's important to keep people's feet to the fire, because what one governor promises, the next one might change. And this is too important. I think our constituency is expecting this. I was at our workshop on Monday evening. I know some other workshops. People are very interested in this. There is that expectation. And we wrote a very forceful letter, if you will, on water issues. And I believe that we, and perhaps you and Jack and your colleagues in the other districts, need to write such a letter to all the gubernatorial candidates to let them know that whoever is elected, we expect engagement. We expect the funding to come through, if not more funding to come through. Thank you.
Member Joya, and then we'll close the public hearing.
Yeah, I want to make sure we're sort of covering this, because Jack, there's two elements to funding for AB 617. One is funding to support our staff's work, and one is funding to actually implement the emissions improvements to improve our communities.
Right.
And so I'm holding the letter from the, I don't know, a lot of legislators to the governor. So, and I know one of my colleagues on the State Air Board, Assemblymember Eduardo Garcia, seems to be a strong advocate for this. So there's a lot of legislators, including our own local ones, including Tim Grayson, who are supporting the $27 million be increased to 75.
Right.
So we have major leadership in the legislature. We just need to help them. I don't think we should cast the legislators in a negative light, because there's a lot of legislators on here who are asking this to be $75 million. Mm-hmm. We just need to support them and have it included in the governor's May revise, right?
Correct.
And
correct.
Of course, the legislator, so we want to, it's about having local air districts lobby the governor as well as other legislators who may not have signed this letter. And as again, there's a lot on here. And then at last week's State Air Board meeting, as you know, the state allocated, the Air Board doesn't allocate the money, it just figures out the rules to get it out, the $250 million statewide to implement AB 617. So this air district will get $50 million this year, this fiscal year, coming up fiscal year, to of which I think was it 70% of it has to be spent on emissions reductions in disadvantaged communities in the Bay Area. So can any of that, that's going to get distributed through the Carl Moyer fund process. Is any of that available to support staffing? Because you didn't say anything about the $50 million. So can't some of that, it's Carl Moyer rules support some of the staffing? Because you made it sound ominous. And I just, again, I just saw $50 million get approved for the Air District last week.
Yeah. Right. Director Joya, I didn't make all those distinctions for the board before, but
they're important distinctions.
Important distinctions, I understand. The $250 million that has been allocated to implement 617 for through the incentive programs, that is directed towards emission reductions.
That's right, right.
And so we have received that $50 million. That's 20% of 250. We're only able to use roughly, 6.25% of that grant dollars to pay for the staff to write the grants, to negotiate the grant agreements.
So about 3 million of that.
Right. And so that's important, but what we're referring to here is that other pot of
money. That's right.
That's really geared towards having the staff sit down with communities, monitoring networks.
How much do we need? Just be helping me to know. How much do we need in additional funding for staffing?
Well,
that we don't have today.
Into that $75 million ask is $15 million for the Bay Area Air District. So all the air districts have been working together to try to have that ask. So far, there's been, as you indicated, Director Gioia, a number of legislators that are very sympathetic to our position. They are appealing to this administration to respond through the May revise. But it's like all budget negotiations, I suspect. They saw us get 27 last year. We're asking for 75, and I suspect it's going to be somewhere in between. And that's May revises later this week, actually, coming out. So I'll but there's keep the board informed.
Right. There's about 50, 55 legislators that signed on to this letter. Absolutely. That seems to be pretty substantial.
Mm-hmm. There, if to go that next level down, just so the board understands, there is a perception by a number of the legislative staff that the Air District can collect its costs or cover its costs by imposing fees, permit fees, and other types of fees. The problem is a number of these communities don't have stationary sources in them that are the leading cause of the problem. A lot of these communities have diesel particulate is driving the risk. So it's not, that's going to be from heavy duty diesel operations like trucks and other types of sources like that. And so there's just been this perception by a number of legislative staff that the district ought to be raising its fees to cover the cost here. We've indicated back that we have actually imposed fees on refineries to cover monitoring in neighborhood monitoring. The Bay Area District leads all the other districts in this regard. But we do need that tranche of funding, that $75 million, really to make sure the staff sits down with all the the communities and starts to develop the plans, puts together the monitoring networks, that kind of thing.
So it seems like half of the state legislators have signed this bill, this letter. So that's a pretty good showing. So is it your belief, how much of this $75 million just would be sufficient? I mean, we may not get the $75 million, right? But how much of the $75 million would be sufficient to be able to cover what you think the increased staff costs will be?
Well,
in addition to the $3 million we're getting out of the $50 million,
right? So, of that 75, I would say that we definitely need about 15 of that. That's a solid number that went into that estimate.
$15 million in staff cost.
Staff monitoring technology, that kind of thing.
Right.
Because we've already identified. And we did this at their last board meeting, West Oakland and Richmond, the first year. And then the second year, there's a number of other communities that are going to be launched into. So there's just a lot of upfront cost that's going to be needed here. And of course, as you all know, the administration is going to change. It's a little bit of an uncertainty for us. And so we think that we want to be able to get in front of all this, start getting out there, get these communities, work underway. And we think about $15 million for the Bay Area District. South Coast is asking for 25, and I can go through all those numbers. San Joaquin is 15.
I just think we need to support these legislators, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Director Zane, Bowders, Cutter, and then we'll close the public hearing, the initial public hearing. Go ahead, Shirley.
So, thank you. In the past we've looked at ramping up our enforcement in particular, and I see there's three positions under community protection. And I think there's an attachment to that in terms of generating fees and also enforcement when we hire these positions. And a lot of our discussion in the past has been, do we have sufficient positions in that area to generate those fees and the violation of those fees as well? So,
well, it's absolutely true, Director Zane. The numbers really involve a whole set of different staff from different divisions and enforcement, permitting. They're all part of that group as well that's gone into our estimates.
But we are going back to where we were originally, maybe like 5 or 6 years ago in terms of the enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. And then one other comment. We continue to have healthy reserves. I think, putting them into pension obligations is great. But I also feel that, and you already touched on this just a minute ago, Jack, we need to have a healthy dialogue on this board about what other types of investments we'd like to make in our communities as well. And I'm glad you've got some initiative staff positions as well. So, thanks.
Director Bowders.
Thank you. You were mentioning, Jack, you're talking about the administration. The May revise comes out May 14th. And I got to be careful how much I say about my full-time job here. I work with the Department of Finance on a daily basis. And so I'm just curious if there's been a conversation with the budget chairs in the legislature about a legislative allocation and not trying to rely on the administration for this funding. Because we've got Assemblymember Ting right here in the district who is chairing the budget, and there's a ton of surplus money. The controller has over $3 billion in surplus revenues estimated through quarter three. So I'm just wondering if there's been an, this is a small ask, have we talked to the legislature?
Actually, let's see if Tom Addison is here, but Director Bowders, the answer is yes. There's been a number of legislators that we have been sitting down and talking with, and it has been a coordinated effort between ourselves and other districts as well. So we've kind of tried to get a number of folks. So there's legislative staff, there's administration, as you indicated, and then Department of Finance has been part of this conversation as well, actually.
So. Yeah, I would just encourage, I mean, I would just talk to, Subcommittee 4, and I would be asking them in Finance to work this into a deal, because it is an ask, but this is the year to do it if you're, in terms of discretionary money, this is the year to do it.
Okay, we'll close with Pauline.
Okay. Yeah, I was just talking, thinking about the monitoring and versus staff and so forth. And so, I mean, as you make these plans, I'm sure that you're taking into consideration, you're putting so much monitoring in, and this is the staff that has to handle it. And if it's extra staff to do other jobs, I know you mentioned meteorology could go away. We're making sure that we're going to cover with the things we're doing well, especially, I'm quite obviously looking out for my community that hasn't had monitoring yet. So I just want to make sure that we are going still on that route to make sure that we're going to cover the communities of care.
Absolutely, that's part of the plan.
And, okay. And Mr. Chairman, I just to make sure the whole board understands, I'm not suggesting we do not do this work completely. We're just going to pare it back slightly to match the resource that we're being provided. Because a lot of the work that is being called for under 617 is something we think and have think that this district and the rest of California should be undertaking. So it's just a matter of, well, if we don't have fully that money, then let's ask ourselves, what can we get done? And that's a conversation that internally I'll have, Mr. Chairman, and then I'll bring it back to all of you to make sure you understand what we are going to get done.
Okay, no further comments. The initial public hearing is Mr. Sparing.
When you bring this back on the staffing positions, could you give us a column that shows the funding source for all of those positions so we have an idea of which ones might be temporary?
We'll do that.
Okay, the initial public hearing is closed. We will bring this back for the final public hearing, June 6th. Public comment is open for non-agenda items. Do we have any cards, Marcy? Seeing none, going once. Anyone want to jump up here and address us on... Seeing no rush forward, we will close public comment. Board member comments? I don't see any lights. We will adjourn to our next meeting, which is June 6th, and the regular meeting will start in about 5 minutes. Get your coffee.